to The Gateway, your compass through the magical waters of spirit communication. Broadcast live from United Public Radio 107.7 FM, New Orleans. I'm your host, C.L. Thomas. So I've been thinking this week, there are a lot of mediums out there. If you look on Facebook and do a search, you'll probably come across thousands and thousands, if not 100,000s of mediums, including myself. But what I feel like really sets the true mediums out there apart from those who are just peddling for expensive candles and hanging shingles and things like that is someone that can actually bring some validation to the client, such as describing someone who is on record for actually having lived. There's a lot of mediums out there that go into paranormal buildings and work on teams and stuff, and they'll say, they'll bring forth spirits, but then there's no actual evidence that this person ever existed. The same thing goes true with when you're sitting for readings. A lot of mediums don't have any evidence behind what they say. My guest tonight is an evidential medium, Michael Christopher, and he's going to talk about why it's so important to have evidence or some kind of validation behind what a medium is saying. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, CL. Nice to be here. Appreciate the invitation.
Thanks for coming on. I know we conversed quite a bit back and forth on Facebook.
Yeah.
So just diving right into the topic, when you call yourself an evidential medium, what exactly does that mean? And how is this different than run-of-the-mill mediums out there?
Well, I got to say, that wasn't a title that I chose. It's kind of a little bit of a funny story. Back when all this opened up for me, it was my very first class. When I really, the only knowledge I had about mediums was reading about them and watching John Edward on TV. And I remember after the first or second class that I had with my very first teacher, she's like, "You're an evidential medium." And I was like, "Okay." I had no idea what that meant. I just kind of went, "Okay, sounds good." And I adopted that title later on to understand what it meant. But I don't think anything's a coincidence, because when this all first started and I kind of stepped into it after a lot of contemplation and resistance, I said, that's the only medium I ever want to be. Because if I can't prove to somebody that I have their person sitting here within the first few minutes of us sitting down, there's no point in me passing a message. Because if you don't know that's your person, what good does a message do when you're not even sure who this person is?
You're exactly right. I don't know how many mediums out there that I've sat for, and they'll just start talking a bunch of gloobla, basically, that doesn't mean anything to me. I've had that happen many times.
I kind of in the same way. You know, I'm very critical of myself. I'm very hard on myself. Anytime I feel that I've reached a plateau or I get comfortable, I usually find some way to dig deeper, because I never want to stay with the status quo. I always want to improve. I always want to be the best voice I can for the spirit world. And I don't want this job ever to become easy, because I feel that if I do, that's probably an indicator for me to just step away then.
There's really not a whole lot of evidential mediums out there right now. I know of Scott Allen. I do a little bit of spirit art. I know Cindy Kaza does a lot of evidential mediumship.
Yep, I've studied with Cindy. I think I took a couple, at least two classes with her several years back. And she is very good, very good. So I've been fortunate. I don't study a lot with mentors. I've kind of, over the last 9 years, I do a lot on my own, but then again, I do like to push myself. So when I feel that need, I usually look for people that, you know, that I feel have credibility to their work, that I feel that they can push me to be better. So I've been fortunate to fall in with these, you know, groups of people. But to your point about evidential mediumship, I got to say, I think I have this thing with titles, right? Everything has a title. I believe we're all the same. A medium's a medium, but I believe there's this certain group of people that is okay with being uncomfortable and pushing themselves, because I believe that everybody's capable of digging deep for this evidence. And I find a lot, I shouldn't quantify it, but I think some people like to play it safe because they don't want to be told, no, the information's wrong or what have you. Where me, it's like, no, I want people to be brutally honest with me. I'm like, don't make this easy on me. You know, I want you, and I tell them, it's like, don't try to save my feelings during the reading. If something doesn't make sense, tell me it doesn't make sense. I will dig for it. And if I can't, I can't. You know, some things are just not going to come through or I'm not going to understand them. But I don't want it ever be to be easy because I want them to know this is your person, you know, and I want them in spirit to give me the information that's going to make sense for their sitter.
And that's just it. That's just it. It's there's so many mediums out there who are afraid to be wrong, like you said, and they won't take no for an answer. Even if the client says no, they'll keep pushing, even though they're wrong. I've seen that happen.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's I find that most of the time it's not that they're wrong. They're maybe misinterpreting what the spirit person's trying to convey. But I will push. I dig my heels in and I'll give it at least three tries. And if I'm just not getting it, I'll tell them it's like, this is what they're showing me. This is what I'm seeing. This is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm hearing in my mind. Hopefully it makes sense to you in some way. If not, that's fine. We can move on from this, you know, because I don't want to spend 5 minutes, but I will give it my best, you know, and sometimes that's just how it is, you know. But I just believe, you know, I really want the best for everybody who does this work. I always say you got to learn to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I know that's hard in society. We get criticized enough just stepping out, doing what we're doing. It's hard enough just putting yourself out there. But, you know, I just think that if people just could find that little bit of more courage to push themselves, oh my God, they would just surprise themselves of what they're capable of.
How did you get started in mediumship?
So it's a long story, but I will really condense it. So I was in the military for 20 years. I was an air traffic controller. Actually, I did that in civilian too after I retired from the Air Force. But mediumship was nowhere in my, like, I want to do this someday. It wasn't even a thought. But from about 1997 till 2015, I lost two of my brothers to complications from cystic fibrosis. I went through kidney failure, dialysis, and a kidney transplant. And then in 2015, my sister was murdered. Now, I know I just threw a bunch of stuff out and there's so much to it, but it, in the sake of saving time, all those events over the years kind of sent me looking for answers. A lot of it when I was sick myself. I think when you get to a point when, you know, if you ever have to face your mortality, you start looking for answers. Is there more beyond the physical? Now, since 2000, I had been reading about mediums. Again, it was just a hobby. It was fascinating. I watched John Edward on TV. I never saw spirits as a kid. This was not, I never had an experience up until, you know, after my sister passed. But when I was sick, it was like just the idea that we may go on in some way gave me so much comfort that if I didn't pull through and survive what I was going through, it was like, I was kind of okay with it because I just felt and knew that there was more. But how I got started, it was after my sister passed. It was probably a couple months after she passed. I had gotten up to go to work one morning. And up until this point, I never had an experience with spirit, never. And I was in my kitchen and I felt like somebody just walked in the room behind me, you know, and I looked and turned and nobody was there. I was expecting my wife to be there. And nobody was there. I was like, that was odd. So I go back to doing what I'm doing. And again, I feel this presence. This time in my mind, I saw my sister standing behind me. And I was like, what is going on here? So in my mind, I see her standing behind me. And I feel the energy of a person in the room. And I just froze. I was like, what is going on? And in my mind, I see my sister walk up behind me. She kind of puts her arms around me and puts her head on my shoulder. Now, again, I'm seeing this in my mind as I'm feeling the energy from it. And I just freaked out because I'm like, what is happening? And probably a few seconds later that she just, it kind of dissipated, the thought, the feeling, it just went away. And it was probably a couple weeks before I even spoke of it. Again, I'm really condensing how this all started, but I reached out to a psychic, which I had never done before, to work on her case because there was no answers. And during working with these couple ladies that I met, I just have one more experience while I was talking with one of them. As we're talking, I kept hearing this voice in my head say, it was like, tell her it's Jim. So I'm hearing this thought in my mind. I'm like, what is going on? I heard it one more time, ignored it. Third time, I asked my friend, I'm like, I'm hearing this voice in my head and it's saying, tell her it's Jim. I passed the cancer. And she's like, that's my father. And I was like, what? And she goes, you're a medium. I'm like, no, I'm not. You know, we had this debate for about 5-10 minutes. And that kind of started things. She's like, you should take this class just out of curiosity. I was like, okay, you know, not thinking anything of it. And I did. And this class just opened the doors for me because it kind of put in my mind what a medium is as opposed to what I thought they were. I thought mediums saw spirit like they saw people, and you know, physically, they heard them physically. So again, in my mind, that's what I thought a medium was. But when I found out most of us, it's internal and how everything works, it's like pieces started falling into place. And again, I just started out of curiosity, not intending to do this work. But I was like, all right, let's see a little more. So I took another class and I was like, interesting. Started playing around with it a little bit. And just one thing led to another, you know, and it kind of put me on this path. And that's really a condensed version of it. I can talk forever. I'm Italian and Irish. And I can just talk and talk and talk. So
Italian and Irish. I could tell by your name, Michael Christopher. Do you work with a spirit guide at all?
No, I don't. From the beginning, I always work directly with the spirit person coming through. I don't rely on my guides for anything. It's me and them. So that's just me. I've never relied on them. I know they're there. Occasionally I'll be like, dude, what are they trying to sell? Cause I'm not getting it, you know? So maybe once or twice I've said, I'm just not getting this. What the hell's going on right now?
You know? It's interesting because so many mediums work in different ways.
Yeah.
Some do have spirit guides. I think Scott Allen has a spirit guide.
Yeah, I mean, mine are there, but I just don't use them to communicate with spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. It's like when someone goes through that, it really brings out their abilities.
Yeah.
What do you think that is?
There's a lot of froze, or maybe I froze. So I missed what you said.
Oh, did you freeze? It seems like trauma or some kind of big life event really brings out the mediumship in people.
It seems
that
way.
Audience work that way.
Yeah, it does.
What's your theory about that?
You know, my theory about us as beings, I believe we're spirit. We come here to experience the physical world to develop our soul. And I believe that's our true home. I believe this is temporary. So my thought, and I do a lot of contemplation. I'll sit in my room and just stare at the wall and just have these deep thoughts about everything, you know, and what makes sense to me and what kind of doesn't make sense to me. But one of the things I believe is that, you know, we all have this ability. We all have this ability. There's no doubt in my mind. But I believe that like any other, you know, ability people have, whether it's, you know, if they're naturally gifted at sports or naturally gifted at music, I think it's the same for people who you know, dive into this world of mediumship. You know, some people just catch on and it just comes naturally. We all have to work on it. It's not like, you know, once we determine we're a medium, it's like, nope, don't need to learn anything else. But I believe things just maybe come to us a little bit quicker and make a little bit more sense. And it just, I never want to say easier, but it just comes more natural. And then there's others that could want this more than anything. And everybody has the ability to communicate with their family and friends. But I think it's just like anything else in life. You may get to a point where you know, that's as far as like you can take this, you know. And I've met many of mediums that they get to a certain point and they just can't push past, you know, point B, if you will. They can communicate with their friends and family, but when they try to do this for others, it just doesn't work, or whatever the case. But then again, I feel that maybe is not the reason they're here, you know, during this lifetime, if that makes sense.
Right. It makes absolute sense. And, you know, quite frankly, a lot of this is working with spirit to some degree anyway.
Yes.
Yep. What do you use your abilities for? Do you work primarily with clients? Do you work on paranormal investigations? What do you do?
First and foremost, excuse me, all I ever wanted to be was a medium. You know, because I knew, again, going through the losses that I went through, I know how comforting a message is from somebody on the other side. Again, from my perspective, being ill, I know how much peace that can give somebody just to know, or even if they've never had this experience, now they've had this experience, they can at least give consideration to there may be something more beyond this world, you know. And for me, again, going through what I went, that gave me a lot of peace. So for me, my desire has always been with mediumship, connecting a person to their people in spirit. I'm also very psychic, but there's something about the psychic. There's something there that it doesn't interest me. I'm good at it. I can do it, but I prefer to be a medium. I prefer to just connect people. I don't do much in the investigation world. I've done it a couple times with local teams, but inevitably what happens is I end up connecting to the people that are there in the group or the people that are on the building, their relatives, you know, that's who's there. Cause my theory is, you know, that's who's going to want to connect. I'm going to connect with people that want to connect with the living,
right?
You know, as opposed to a building that has residual energy in it, an imprint. So I don't know. That's never been like a real interest of mine. So my passion has always been just mediumship.
Do you do galleries?
I do. And I'm kind of one of those weird people. I started doing galleries literally a couple months after I even understood that I was a medium. I have a habit of getting myself in these situations by people just asking me to do something. I'm like, sure, why not? You know, so that's how that started. But I did my first gallery not knowing anything about what I was going to do, but the audience knew. It's like, look, you're helping me. You know, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm attempting to learn. And we just did it, you know, and we did a thing where the donations from the people being there went to the local animal shelter. So even if I sucked, it was still a win-win, you know, but it was such a great experience. And in the beginning, I preferred to do group readings as opposed to one-on-ones. To me, the energy is so much more vibrant and just there's so much of it. I don't know. I just got addicted to that type of reading. But, you know, I had to, you know, really dive into the one-on-ones too, because those are just so important. So I kind of learned the other way. You know, I did the groups first, then started doing private readings, and now I do both. So
I want to dig into the weeds just a little bit. So when you have a sitter in front of you, it's kind of like a three-way conversation, right? It's you, the sitter, and then the spirit that comes in. What actually happens when that spirit comes in to you?
So the way I experience it and the way I try to help people understand how I do, and again, everybody's going to have every medium, every person's going to have their way, right? It's like trying to describe how you breathe. You know, how do you breathe? I don't know. At this point, I just do it. So it's there. But so it's always interesting when I have to actually think about my process. So I don't want this to sound simple, but for me, mediumship is easy. We make it hard. We make it difficult. It's so natural. It's just that our mind and our ego wants to get in the way and make this more difficult than it has to be. So literally for me, I don't go through any ritual to do readings. I sit down, and the moment that I switch my mind to spirit, and that's all it is, it's like a conscious shift. I just think of the spirit world. I'm connected. There's nothing else I need to do right now. They're here. And then I just, whoever gets my attention first, I start communicating with them. And it's funny because from the beginning, a male will always step in on my right and a female will always be on my left. So I know that if I feel a presence off to my right, I got a male here. And then for the moment that their energy kind of blends with mine, and this goes for everybody, everything in that spirit person's consciousness, their energy, everything about the life that they lived is in that energy. Now, our human mind can only, you know, comprehend so much at once, but I'll become aware of different things. I may become aware of initially how they passed. I may feel the age that they passed, you know, and once I start getting those thoughts, and that's what it really is to me, it's a thought that just touches my mind, whether it's something visual or a feeling or a knowing, I just talk about it. So the second that I experience it, I talk about it. I don't take time to try to think about it, understand it, because the moment I do that, now my mind's engaged and the communication fails. So I stay out of the way the best I can. And I just start talking. So again, it's the easiest way I can convey it. It's a thought. Like, I know I have this man here, and in my mind, I know he's 25, you know, I don't know how I know that. I just know that that's what he's making me feel.
Have you ever had a spirit show up? I always have a hard time with ages because the spirit will show up as they may have died in their 60s, or, you know, somewhat older, but they'll appear to me in their 30s or 40s or something like that. Was that ever happen to you?
In the very beginning, yes. But now it's like, not that I get like their exact age. Sometimes I do. But I will get a general, like, I know they're in their early 20s or their mid 20s or late 20s. So I don't know. Again, I don't know how I know. I just feel it. Like, I know this person passed in their 60s. I'm feeling it. I will never say that I'm 100% accurate, but I mean, a lot of times it's fairly like within a couple of years. And it's not something I consciously try to get. I don't try to get anything for myself. I just kind of give my mind and space to them, and whatever they're sending me, I talk about it. So I never try to put an expectation about how a session's going to go. You know, I don't have a checklist like, no, you got to tell me who you are, you know, how you passed, what you did for a living. They know what their person needs to hear, you know, so I just get out of the way, you know.
And sometimes it could be the most off the wall things. There's been a couple of times where I've sat for somebody doing spirit art and I thought, I can't tell them that sounds ridiculous. You know, why do I want to tell them about the, I saw a birdhouse one time and it was just totally off the topic thing that popped up. And it was like, no, I'm not saying that. That sounds like the most stupid thing ever. It doesn't even fit into conversation. But I did draw it in the artwork and, the person said, yeah, my mom used to have, birdhouses all over the yard and she loved feeding the birds, but
And that's just it. It's like, they know what their person needs to hear. That's not for us to understand or, you know, rationalize. It's the littlest things can make the biggest impact. I know, like, one of my brothers, you know, the moment that a medium says your brother's here and he's showing me the deer rifle, they don't have to tell me anything else beyond that. I know it's my brother and I know what that story's about. So again, it's like, again, our ego, we need to park it. It's not for us. So if they show it to me, I'm talking about it. I've had teenagers come through and say, you know, I'll ask them in my mind, how do you let your parents know you're around? And a couple of them have been like, well, I fart. And the first time I was like, that was a gallery reading. And I was like, I got laughing so hard. I couldn't even talk. I had to sit down. I was like, you got to give me a moment. And once I finally got composed, I was like, look, I'm giving it to you the way your son, he said, I asked him the question. He says, I fart. Her jaw dropped. She turned to a lady like two rows back and she's like, I knew it. She goes, I was at work the other day in my cubicle and I smelt this sulfur smell. And I knew, she's like, who did that? Nobody did it. She goes, I just somehow knew it was my son. I'm like, okay. You know, so it's.
And that just goes back to, they were people too, you know?
Yeah. Yep,
we forget sometimes that these are actual, and you know, even with the paranormal world, we forget that these were actual human beings at one point.
Yeah.
You know,
They come through with the personality they had while they were in the physical world, because that's how we knew them. Mm-hmm. So if they had a sense of humor, they're going to bring that through, because one very important reason why is because they want us to continue to laugh. They don't want us sitting here crying in our beer over them. You know, they want us to live our life. It's hard when we go through that loss, but you know, that's something that comes up in, you know, a lot of readings, is how can we honor them? And their message to me is like, you can honor me by living your life, by being happy. It's a short trip here on the physical world. Enjoy it, you know? So, I find that most readings, they will come through and try to make somebody laugh about something, because that's what they want from us. They want us to do that.
Have any of the spirits kind of let you in on what the other side is like?
You know, that's such an interesting topic. And, you know, I've read a lot of books on it, so I have an idea of what other mediums have experienced, and a lot of regression therapists, what they've gained from their clients under hypnosis about the other side. My sister, when she first passed, I kind of asked her, you know, just what is it like? And again, you got to understand, and this is for the people out there, that in my experience, communication with spirit is not linear. It's not like I'm having a conversation with them. I may ask them a question and I may get an answer right away. And sometimes I may get a thought a little later about the topic. But I remember her giving me this thought that she lives in what we consider like apartment buildings, because she likes that communal space. And I was like, interesting. So it's very brief things that I personally experienced, but I believe there's a reason for that. And this is just my theory. You know, that's, again, my belief is that's a place that we came from and that we're going to go back to. And I believe while we're here, there's a reason why we have this amnesia, they call it, that we don't remember. It's because we're supposed to be here and we're supposed to be experiencing the physical world and not worrying about that place. So it kind of makes sense, you know, that at least my experience, I haven't been told a whole lot about the other side. I do remember one of the guys that I served with, he passed away shortly after we retired. And I had a dream visit by him. And I have very few visitations, but he came through. And I still remember to this day, he was trying to explain to me how it is over there. And he was trying to explain it like using levels and colors. And I was just like, I could not wrap my mind around what he was telling me. But I think he was trying to convey that it's just different vibrations, you know, level of consciousness and all this other. I'm like, whoa, okay. That's too much for my small little human mind to comprehend right now.
It does make sense. I had a friend that passed away probably about 13 years ago now. And he showed me that he was staying in like a dorm, and it was like a resting place. And I guess he was being trained to do something else. I don't know what it was, but mm-hmm. It was an actual like dormitory kind of thing that he was staying in. It was very interesting. But
have you ever read the books by Dr. Michael Newton?
I have heard of his name.
Okay. Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls are like two of my favorite books. But he was a regression therapist from the 70s. And briefly, I'll just tell you, he stumbled on these past life regressions through his work. And he wrote a series of books that just, it's mind-blowing. It's basically what he does is he would regress these people to their most previous life. And I actually had one of these sessions about 10 years ago. But you go under hypnosis, and I had never been hypnotized, so I didn't know what it was like. But you're completely conscious. I was fully aware of what was going on. It's almost like channeling spirit. You're kind of in that just hazy daydream state, but the things that come through are what you're experiencing. But what he would do is regresses you into your previous life, walks you through the passing of that. And then he stops in the middle and you kind of get to visit the afterlife. It's wild. So again, these books, they just opened my eyes to a lot of like theories and thoughts of things that I had a hunch about. And through his research, kind of some of them are confirmed that, you know, we do live lives over there. It's as real as it is to us here on Earth. So, you know, to your point of asking what it's like, that's, I just feel that we do have, you know, a life, you know, we do things. We're not just floating around on clouds up there.
Yeah, it's a little more than just playing a harp on a cloud.
But that would be so boring.
A lot of people believe that, though, that that's what they're going to do. They're going to go and play harps for all of eternity.
Not me, man. My cabin in the lake on the, you know, it's already there. I know that's where I'm going as soon as it's like I'm going on vacation after this nonsense.
Have you seen that movie, What Dreams May Come?
No. No.
With Robin Williams.
I have heard of it. Now I got to definitely, what is it called again?
What Dreams May Come.
I got to watch that now.
Robin Williams plays a, I think he's a physician in the movie, and his wife is an artist and she paints. And he ends up passing away. The two kids pass away first from a car accident, and then he ends up passing away from a car accident. And she ends up committing suicide. But in the spirit world, he tries to find her. It's a really good movie. It's the point of it is that we kind of create our own eternity, basically. Mm-hmm. Like you see her paintings and he's running through her paintings and stuff like that. It's really neat. It's a really fun film. Courtney says it's an amazing movie. It really is.
Courtney. Yeah, it is. And it makes so much sense, though, about, you know, because that's what my theory is, too. It's a world of thought. So you create, you know, you hear people talk about manifestation here in the physical. We're over there. It's like instant. You don't have, it's like not this process that we have to go through here. You know, if we want to live in an apartment complex, we have that thought and there it is, you know, and it's as real as it is here is what, you know, I've read in books and other mediums have talked about. And then when you get bored with that, it's kind of like you can put the eraser over it and try something else, you know? So it's a world of thought.
Here's kind of a strange question. When you go and there's like centuries and centuries and centuries of spirits of people who have lived and died, do they kind of get overlapped sometimes when you go into like a haunted space that, like say you went to a haunted castle or something that has like 400 years of history there. Do you ever have the issue of overlapping histories with the spirit world?
Yeah, again, my experience with that is so limited, but you know, what I have experienced is, you know, I can pick up on the residual energy of a building and like what has happened in that building, you know, during its existence. I can't say that I've ever communicated with a spirit, you know, during that time. But my theory on that is too, is this is digging deep here. So this is just a theory. But again, we're living more lives as a soul than just this one. Because, and I think this may parallel what you're asking, but I've been asked too in sessions, like if, like my sister and my brothers who passed before me, so they're there. What happens when I pass and say they've chose to incarnate? Are they going to be there when I get back? And the answer to that is yes, because a part of our soul is still there. So with the question I think you asked, if I'm getting it right or understanding it, I believe that person or who owned that building, if you will, I believe that they can come back while people are there. Out of interest, I don't think they're still there, if that makes sense.
Because it's that building that's the connection.
Yeah It's like if you have a favorite bar and you want to go back to it, it's like you go back to it, you're not stuck there, but hey, so-and-so's there, I'm gonna go visit while they're there. So that may happen while you're there in that space, you know, if somebody, you know, the spirit on the other side wants to come through. I don't know,
does that mean the theory that buildings are haunted though?
And see, this is so out of my wheelhouse, but I have a theory on that too. Like, what is actually haunted? Is it the energy that's just contained in that building because of the circumstances that happened in that space? Because my theory is, you know, I hear a lot of people talk about trapped spirits, and I've put a lot of time into thinking about that. And I'm like, my mind will not let me comprehend how that's even possible. Because, because of this, spirits can come and go. You know, I just don't fall into that theory of understanding how people could think that somebody's trapped in a space, because energy can't be trapped. So I don't know. Again, I don't have that much experience with it, but the thought that I've given it, it's just, I don't know. There's a lot to be said about what's actually a haunting. You know, is there a spirit there that actually stays there all the time? Or is it the energy that we're picking up because people are there? And again, they want to come visit while people are there. Is that what they're picking up? So I don't know. I don't know.
That's an interesting thought, because I kind of feel like a lot of it might be, especially when it's a famous haunted place and you have paranormal team after paranormal team going in there and doing investigations, looking for spirits and things.
Yeah.
Who's to say it's not their own energy bringing forth spirits?
Yeah. Or their family or friends on the other side that are coming with them to visit while they're there, because now they're open to it.
Right.
You know, most people don't, they're not open to this when they're going about their day, and mediumship and everything about it goes with intention. So your family and friends know that you're going to this location and you're looking to communicate. So it's like, why wouldn't they be there? It's like, hey, they're actually open to this now. Let's go there. You know? So again, that's just my thoughts on it. That is it the people that they're connected to that they're actually picking up on?
That's a really interesting point.
Yeah.
I want to change the topic just a little bit to skeptics.
Yeah.
How do you handle skeptics?
I love skeptics, and I'm not just saying that. I encourage all my clients. I'm like, I want you to be a skeptic. I am a skeptic. I had to prove this to myself before I even thought about doing this work. So I tell them, it's like, I want you to dig. I don't want you just going to mediums without doing research. I'm like, you need to be you need to exercise discernment. You need to get a gut feeling on a person, you know, just like anything else. If you see my beautiful face on an internet, do you feel connected to come sit with me for a session? Or if you look at my picture and go, yuck, who the hell's that? Run, you know, because that's just how it is. But I believe I want everybody to have a healthy level of skepticism, because it's needed. Cynicism, on the other hand, that's a whole nother topic. But skeptics, yes, I love skeptics. I encourage skepticism, because I want them to, again, when they come for a session with me, when they leave, I want them to understand, you know, to know 100% without a doubt, their person was there with them. I'm not just going to sit there and tell you, yeah, your mom loves you, you know, and she used to cook on Sundays. No, it's the things that bring them back to life during a reading, their personality traits, their mannerisms, things that would say, things that would they do, you know, that's what makes the difference during a reading. And I think that's what's going to hit home for them. So yes, be skeptical.
What if they're so skeptical that they don't even believe in the spirit world at all?
Then they shouldn't probably go for a reading. And it's not my job to make them believe. And I will never, that's not my job to make somebody believe in this. That's up to the person. But I believe if they somehow end up in a session with me, they're there for a reason. I would hope it's not just to challenge me, because one, they just lost out on their money, because I will not put up with, you know, rude behavior. Again, you know, I don't waste my time with people that are just dead set, like skeptic. I won't waste my time with people like that. If that makes sense.
What are some of the transformations that you have seen from your clients?
Oh my goodness. It's just amazing. Just to see how they were when they first came in to how they react after they have been through an experience. Just the comfort that they feel knowing that their person's okay. You know, and that they're not gone. Yes, they're gone from the physical world. And yes, we're never going to get over that. And we have to learn to live without them physically being here. you know, that's something we carry through till we pass. But there's something in that space that it just gives them comfort knowing that they're still somewhere, because how would I know this information? You know, and I think that's another important trait of evidential mediumship is, you know, they come through with things that only their people are going to understand. And again, I mean, there's so many different things that I've, you know, experienced just from a reading, but just the joy that they feel. Yeah, this is hard work, but that's what makes it worth it.
And that's kind of the point, isn't it? Is that when you're working with spirit, what you're trying to do is bring some kind of hope to somebody, mm-hmm. that their loved one just isn't gone, that there's still some element of them that still exists.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the most amazing thing I've ever been a part of, you know, and it's just an honor for me to do this work, you know, and we're a special bunch of people that actually just, people that only see mediums on TV have no idea what mediums go through. And I believe the ones that are out there still, it's just what we put ourselves through. Oh my goodness.
Some of the tougher cases that you get, how do you handle like that extremely, when you go into a reading and you see just horrific things that happen to a person?
They will only show me what they want. They won't hide. If they want me to talk about their past, and you're going to show it, you know, and again, I don't edit. It's not my job to edit what comes through. But if, you know, I don't know, for some reason, a lot of my clients, maybe it's just because I'm a guy and just what I've been through, but I get a lot of suicides that come through. You know, and I won't give them the graphic what I'm seeing, but I will tell them I have this, you know, young man here who's showing me that he took his own life. You know, and so I won't say what I'm seeing. Like, they know. I mean, they know. Mm-hmm. So there's no point in digging in there. But I mean, it's fun. It's interesting how the spirit will come in with that, but then turn it around to like, all right, now we're going to concentrate on who I was as a person during this life, because that's what I want you to remember me for, not what I did, but who I was. So a lot of times it may start out that way, but they kind of bring it around to, you know, they want, again, they somehow they transform that person into smiling when you think of them now.
How do you as a medium kind of, I guess I get this question a lot and I never know how to answer it.
Yeah.
How do you close that off from your everyday life?
I don't think about it. When I am not working, I don't think about this stuff. I am not one of those people that go around and think about mediumship and, oh, I should give this person a message in the store or no, it's a discipline. It is. And, you know, I do teach every now and then, but that's the one thing that I harp on is like, you have to have a discipline with this. You have to have a boundary with this, you know. When I am not sitting down to do a session, I'm not working. I'm not even thinking about the spirit world. And that's how I go about it. You know, when I'm done with the session, I leave it there. You know, I used to lament about them and, oh, I should have reached a little further into the evidence or blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, I believe in spirit. I believe that the person got exactly what they needed to get during that session. And I just have to be okay with leaving it there. And I can't like just constantly think about, oh, I could have did this, or I should have. No, it's done. It's over. It's in the books. Walk away. Close off.
So you're not carrying around those feelings with you all day long.
Nope. And it's, again, it's a discipline.
Out there that do that.
What's that?
You hear a lot of people that will say that they're carrying that stuff around. I've done that before.
Yeah, it took work. I mean, it does take work. It's not an easy process, but for your own sanity, it's like we have to get to that point where, you know, it's work's work and not work is not work, you know, and I just really have to be disciplined about that I don't allow myself to even think about it when I'm not working.
How has working with spirit changed your outlook on life?
Well, first and foremost, I don't fear death. You know, when my time has come, I'm okay with it. You know, hopefully I'm fortunate enough to go out a nice quiet passing in my sleep, but I know when the moment comes, you know, it's there and it's inevitable. And I'm going through my illness again. You know, I had to face it, you know, 14 years ago. And from that day forward, it's like, I should have been gone 14 years ago, you know? So every day past that point is a bonus. But I think doing this work not only gives me peace, you know, but again, the people that I have the privilege of sitting with, hopefully that they can, you know, find an inner peace, knowing that this is not the end of the line. This is just a brief passover to our true existence, you know? So that's my biggie, if you want to say.
Yeah. Have you ever worked on any crime scenes or anything like that for missing persons?
I did early on when I was just exploring different avenues of this work. And I think it takes a special person and it takes a special skill set and a lot of training, because I do know people that do it. And I think this is maybe a side little tangent, but I think we all get lumped into these categories. We're a medium. Oh, you do this and you do this. No, I don't do that and that and that. You know, there's specialties within this career or this field. You know, and I think just like anything else, I think people are pulled. If they're somehow in their soul, that's what they're meant to do. They kind of get pulled into that area and they work in that area. But it's very involved from, you know, what I've heard from people that do it. So
what is your opinion on how important training is for mediumship?
I think it's critical. So many reasons, but one, just to know you're not alone and what you're feeling. Very early on, I can remember feeling like isolated, and I felt like, I don't know, burned out, and all these other emotions that come with doing this work. And when you're alone and you have nobody to talk with, you just think you're losing your mind. So when I was fortunate enough to get into classes and interact with other people, to understand that they go through the same things. So that's one aspect of training and development, that you learn that you're not alone with what you're experiencing. But I believe that getting the right teacher from the beginning to give you a good foundation to build upon, I think it's critical. I think it's critical to have a roadmap forward. Now, I always say, do not try to emulate your teacher or duplicate what they're doing. That person already exists. Mm-hmm. Any class that you take, I believe you take the tools that you've taught and what resonates with you and works for you, take it and apply it to your own methods. But you got to develop yourself and do things your way. That's key. And I think that's what a lot of people need to be teaching. They need to teach people that. It's like, don't try to emulate your teacher. I'm going to share my experience with you. Take what works and apply it to your own work. So again, I think a good foundation is critical.
If somebody out there is listening and they really want to explore mediumship and learn more about it and kind of develop their own abilities, what mm-hmm. would you recommend for them?
You know, again, you use your gut, use your intuition that you have, and search out a teacher that resonates with you. You know, just like mediums, like you said in the beginning, we're everywhere. So are the teachers, you know, and don't just jump into a class without doing your research about that teacher. Learn about the person, see what their philosophy and theories on the afterworld and you know, mediumship, you know, get to understand what they believe in and see if it resonates to what you feel, you know. And I think if you use your intuition and your gut, you'll find the right teacher. And referrals, get referrals. That's very important.
So, Michael, what do you have on your plate? What's coming up?
Lots of stuff. I never know. I don't plan. I seriously do not plan. I think I learned this when I was sick, that, you know, it's like I had to learn to live in it now just because of what I was going through. And it's, I have a bad habit of planning. So, I mean, I have my calendars open for sessions, you know, through my website. I do work part-time besides this because I was off for a year. I left air traffic control and kind of just stepped away from everything and just kind of see, you know, just wanted to discover what I wanted to be when I grew up. And after a year of just kind of doing mediumship, I was like, I need something to keep me kind of in the normal world. So I work at the airport doing like maintenance kind of stuff, just part-time, just to give me that balance. So it's kind of like I'm doing both right now. I would like to teach a class here maybe sometime during the summer or something again. But right now I do, you know, online. A lot of my sessions are online or over the phone. I do DEMS over Zoom. I do in-person demonstrations here in the local area too. So I kind of just go with it. I kind of wing it.
Well, where can people find you?
So my website's michaelchristophermedium.com. I'm also on Facebook, Michael Christopher Medium or Michael Christopher Evidential Medium. And then I'm on Instagram. I do have a YouTube channel that I largely ignore. I really haven't done much with it. I was on TikTok for a few months and I was like, no, I got to get away from this. That place is crazy.
What, you didn't like the teenagers dancing and everything?
Oh my God. I was doing live readings on there and it was just overwhelming. I mean, I was having like 300-400 people during my lives and I'm like, this is insane.
Wow. So, that is insane.
But I mean, it's a good energy. It's just, to me, it's just overwhelming. I don't know, there was something about it. I was like, you know, this is not my speed. So I kind of walked away from TikTok.
Well, Michael, it was really nice having you on the show and meeting you in person.
Thank you. It was an honor being here. I appreciate the invitation. I truly do.
I definitely will. I'm going to have you back on too. So.
Oh, I'd love that.
Thank you so much for having come on and shared your story.
Oh, my pleasure.
You've been listening to The Gateway, your portal to the unexplained, the mystical, and the otherworldly, broadcast live from United Public Radio Network, 107.7 FM, New Orleans. You can follow me on social media and find out the latest of what I'm doing at www.clthomas.org. Until next time.